You're listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is time to check in with Dr. Bob Weiss at Concordia Seminary. Good morning, Dr. Weiss.
Good morning, Andy, to you and your listeners.
Good morning, good morning. What topics do you have for us this morning?
Well, let's just talk about, well, briefly, one thing about something we chatted a bit about a few weeks ago about should chimpanzees who are being experimented on, but not killed, because if they did, PETA would be knocking at their cages. They're seeking personhood for these chimps so that they could be released. And this is, of course, the Non-Human Rights Project, where they had filed a series of suits asking the courts in New York, for chimpanzees, by the way, that they be given personhood status. That means protected by our laws. And so, which I find interesting in terms of Roe v. Wade. But from an evolutionary viewpoint, for those people who believe that we came from monkeys, that I would find that interesting, because now would that mean monkeys are part of Roe v. Wade? See, but the judge, briefly here now, said no. Not right now, but it's interesting. The paraphrase is, it's going to happen someday, because we are, quote unquote, 98% similar in our genetic material, our DNA. It's similar in terms of what they call banding patterns, where the base pairs are located on the chromosomes, but it doesn't mean they have the same function, because chimpanzees don't talk. Can they reason? Yes, Pavlovian, they can reason. Over and over again, they catch on with certain things. But as a scientist, and having looked at all of the various skulls that people have found, I just don't see us coming from old world monkeys. I have not seen it. Just because he ate a banana doesn't mean that. And so, once again, we're back to first article. We're back to our apostolic teachings.
It just depends on how hairy they are, right?
Well, that's true. That's true. And I suppose we could. I don't want to get into that issue, because some people have more hair than others. But National Geographic comes out. One last comment on this. I would encourage our listeners to, especially for those who have children or nieces or nephews at grade schools and high schools and colleges, take a look at their biology books or their environmental science books, because there you're going to find not objective words about our origins, but subjective words. Well, this is the best we can. Probably we came from here. It's not an objective, factual-based story, even though they will tell you that it is.
And what the book says and what is spoken in class by the instructor is, may not necessarily always be the same either.
No, it may not be. When I taught at the University of Illinois as a grad student, we had a book, zoology I was teaching at, and of course it would show that we came from old world monkeys, and it was all probability. And that's what genetics is probability. But since we've turned to genetics, to DNA, they say, see, 99% similarity to monkeys. Well, this is God's dealing. I mean, we have the same base pairs as plants and animals, cows and so forth. I mean, hello, if we didn't have them, we couldn't be eating anything. We'd all look like a bunch of hockey sticks with hair. We wouldn't be eating. I mean, so you can't have something that's dissimilar.
I'm taking that down as a famous quote from Dr. Weiss.
Yeah, well, most students write my quotes down, and as opposed to any profound statement other than that I might be saying. So the other thing I'd like to briefly discuss, and this, again, Wall Street Journal, and came out of some other magazines I have in front of me here. Let's hit pause before altering humankind. This gets into gene editing technology. Now, not complicated for our listeners. That simply means in the egg or the sperm is going in, when they find that this particular egg or sperm is carrying, say, the gene for cystic fibrosis or Huntington's or some other, or Downs, has an extra chromosome on chromosome 21, we can remove that and insert the quote-unquote good gene. That's called gene editing, so, which is very basic, very similar to if you're reading a manuscript, you find, well, what's that? So you remove the bad sentence and put the good sentence in, or modify it. So it's just simply editing the bad genes, getting the bad sentence structure out and putting the good one in. Well, I think in some ways, a lot of people would not have heartburn over that because in treatment, not enhancement. This, of course, gets into eugenics, which means good genes, good beginnings. And this is what Margaret Sanger, the beginner of Planned Parenthood, and many other people in our country, when they were eugenically sterilizing over 80,000 people from the 1920s into the early 1970s, were doing, was to remove, quote-unquote, bad genes through sterilization. I call this embryonic sterilization simply because they already do this. It's called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. They're doing this at fertility clinics. So that if you do in vitro fertilization, quote unquote, make a baby in a test tube with the husband's sperm and the wife's eggs, they are combined and you have a human being, they say, well, we're going to test this for cystic fibrosis because we know that both parents carry the recessive gene. And in that fact, there's a 25% probability one of these, quote unquote, embryonic human beings could have cystic fibrosis. Well, we're going to test them. Well, what are you going to do with them? They're going to destroy them because they don't perceive, back to what we said a couple weeks ago, that this is a human being, but just simply a mass of cells. And it's only a potential human being. I say it's a human with potential. But even then, why would you want to murder, destroy that which has potential? I mean, the logic fails me. And of course, it's not aware of its surroundings, so it's no big deal to a lot of people. So this gene editing technology of rewriting the genetic program is really fast-moving stuff in the field of genetics. And I think that within the context of just looking into a sperm and an egg to say, well, we want to try and change this to treat, to remove this, say, Huntington's disease from a whole line of people, when that's a very dominant disorder, We're gonna remove this gene so everybody in this family will not have it. I'm kind of struggling with this because the only way to do that now is after the creation of an embryonic human being. It's the only way to do it, where they check the genetic code. And this is what, of course, what they're doing here with let's not be so fast by altering humankind, because choosing to transmit voluntary, as it says here, changes to future generations involves a value judgment on the part of parents, a judgment that future generations might view differently. So if we're going to start doing this by removing the bad and putting the good genes in, why not removing, say, the gene that says our genes that say, well, your IQ is very average. We're going to add some genes in that make you smarter. And people might be thinking, listening to us, that's never going to happen. I would suggest they look at the movie Gattaca, where probably, well, in 1996, when this was made, I would say a good 80% of this was all fictitious. Good science fiction movie. Mm-hmm. Gattaca stands for the base pairs, guanine, adenine, cytosine, thymine. So actually, when I'm done with this, your listeners could take an Advil after hearing all of this. It's a good movie because now what has happened in that movie, other than the removal of potentiality for criminal activity and other emotional things that happen in that movie are very real, that they do today in over 400 fertility clinics. So this gets back to what does it mean to be human? Mm-hmm. And again, what we talked about in terms of dealing with Boy Scouts and gay and so forth, where do we draw lines on this technology? Because it must fit into the scripture. Science fits into the Bible. It's not the Bible fitting into science.
Well, the potential with gene editing, the potential for going back to eugenics and it just seems like playing God. And sure, I understand how one could see it as good intentions to try to remove something, the genes for a disease or a disorder. But how far are we then from using it to determine eye color, hair color, ability, all those things that for, well, what we end up with then is designer babies.
We have that already. And the quote here says, the work raised fears about gene editing. Raised fears that gene editing could be used to tweak babies in many ways before they were born. They haven't got to that point, but what they do prior to that in fertilization is they go to eugenic sperm banks and they have women who are donating their eggs, and usually the women who are doing this, and they do this at fertility clinics. They get eggs that have been donated, and they're paying fees $10,000 to $70,000. Ivy League, you know, high IQ, blonde, blue-eyed, African-American, whatever you desire, it's there, and it's in the bank. It's in the bank. So you go to the bank, and you order at the bank, and you pay the bank the price. And then they take the sperm from, say, a Nobel laureate or some other place that's been has a high IQ, has a good job, and then you mix those together, and you get the child of your dreams, literally. This is it. And they do this for sex selection. You want a boy or a girl? They can do this. They can't get specific, like, I want blue-eyed blonde, but they have the general characteristics within the context. So you could get a brown hair, but the point is they really want somebody that looks good and looks very similar to the father or the mother. That's the other thing. And this can be done already in a very general way. The more specific way, of course, would be after the embryonic human has been formed, and now we're going to go in and pick and choose exactly what we want this child as he or she develops to be at the end.
And everything has its price tag.
And this is very expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so we're dealing with a topic of stewardship. Here we go, back to the Bible again, back to the basics. We're dealing with an issue of what I want. You know, and this may, you know, irritate some people, but to find your designer baby, in a way, people say to me, well, is this a sin to go back and to try and tweak the sperm and the egg or the embryo afterwards and decide this is kind of what I'm looking for because I'm infertile and so forth and this is what we want. Is this a sin?
That's a good question to ask. Is this a sin? Especially as we look at all these topics, but gene editing, just frightening as
well. Yeah, I mean, I can't say in and of itself, you know, gene editing is a sin if we're dealing with treatment. Mm-hmm. But clearly, if people are seeking it, it certainly has the potential. You're right. That's a good way to put it. But when people are seeking a child and they say, this is a child I want, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking to myself, look at Abraham, Hagar, and Sarah, the child I want. Well, excuse me. And so read Genesis 16, 1, 2, and 3, and so that I may be built up through her, or through this child. Very idolatrous. And we know what happened there with Ishmael and so forth, you know, and then mm-hmm. The surrogacy. So there are ways that you can go into the scriptures to deal with these issues, to say you need to back away from some of this technology, because it is not in service to the Word of God.
Certainly thought-provoking. Well, thank you, Dr. Weiss.
My pleasure.
God's peace.